Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Ich bin Elke de la Sota.
And I'm Chad Turnbull.
Mit Savorian Wines haben wir zwei katalanische Weine, Bogatell aus Terralta und El Raval aus Montsant, in die Staaten gebracht. Beide sind biodynamisch und unter $15 zu bekommen. Wir arbeiten mit Winzern in der vierten Generation zusammen. Chad und ich sind sehr stolz auf die Zusammenarbeit mit Jason Colucci und der Morning After Show. Die gleiche Hingabe, die Jason für seine Show aufbringt, haben wir für unsere Weine.
Für mehr Infos und wo es unsere Weine gibt, klick auf den Link Savoyan Wines.
Beautiful day, New York City Marathon day here today. I was going to take a train, but then the cab company picked up the phone, Arecibo, 718-757-295. No, that's actually my cell phone. 783-6465, Arecibo cab company. Luckily we booked all of our guests as call-ins today because the one guest we do have in studio is not here yet. Apparently the Verrazano Bridge didn't open until 2:30. It's Mike Verga. He should be here soon. There's a bunch of great guests here today. One of them I worked for 3 years. He was a huge inspiration to my career before I even got in the restaurant industry. And working for him, I learned a ton. That person is Drew Nieporn from the Myriad Restaurant Group. He'll be calling in. We'll talk to him in about 2 minutes. Also, I want to wish a happy birthday to Hugo Seller. Hugo Seller is the son of one of the listeners of The Morning After, Jennifer Seller and Pete Seller. Quick thing, I was out Saturday night. I had a few problems with a few restaurants, and I'm going to bring them up because they refused me a table. And I was in Brooklyn, and I live in Brooklyn. I live in Park Slope. It was Saturday night. I walked into a restaurant called the Rosewater, which is on Union Street on the corner of 6th Avenue, and they close at 11 o'clock. I walked in at 10:15, and the first thing the host said to me was, "You have to order right away." And I was extremely upset. I was with my girlfriend at the time, and I was like, we walked right out, and she said, "Why are you walking out?" I said, "Well, I just don't like to be rushed. I work in the industry, and you know, I feel like for people that don't work in industry that walk into restaurants, there's a 30-minute window. If the restaurant closes at 11, you don't walk in after 10:30. I mean, if you walk into a finer dining establishment when the standards are they take tables until 11, that's a whole other thing. But it's a neighborhood restaurant. That's sort of like the grammar that I kind of operate under. Also, so then we walked to another restaurant on 6th and 13th Street called Bar Toto. And I love Bar Toto. And we walked in. It was 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. We had walked down the block. And they, you know, we sat at the bar and they had a three top open. Now, it was a questionable three top, meaning, you know, when three people sat there, it probably wouldn't be the most comfortable experience. And I asked the gentleman, I said, "Could we have that table?" And he said, "No, well, we have that two top over there." And it was that table that was right near the kitchen and the bathroom, you know, that horrible table. And I said, "Well, we'd really like that table." And no one was waiting for a table. So that's another lesson for anyone that doesn't work in industry. If there are a ton of people waiting, you want a specific table, and the maitre d' tells you that you can't have that, there's a reason why. There's other people waiting. But there's no one waiting. So we got bumped down. And you know, I don't want to make the show angry in the beginning, but I think for restaurant people, we work really hard. We're out there all the time when we get treated that way because we try to accommodate people so much. So when we see the other end of it, we kind of get upset. But then I did go to Sidecar on 5th and 15th, and I'd like to thank Bart. We got a table right away. It was a four top, and we had an amazing experience. I'm going to jump right into my first guest, who is Drew Nieporn. In 1985, a restaurant opened in Tribeca. Back then, the neighborhood was a desolate place of old warehouses and artistic spaces. That restaurant was Montestrey. The restaurateur was Drew Nieporn. A New York City native and graduate of Stuyvesant High School and Cornell University, Drew pioneered downtown New York City dining and added to his resume Tribeca Grill, the Nobu Empire, and eventually the rebirth of Montrachet, which became Cortone, etc., etc., etc. He's a James Board award-winning restaurateur, opened many other restaurants, and the CEO of the Myriad Restaurant Group, and he also was my boss for a few years. He's here today to discuss his background and the future of New York City dining. Drew!
My man, how you doing?
What's up, man? Thanks for doing the show. Can you just, you know, get into a little bit about when you, what Tribeca was like when you opened Montrachet? I remember you telling me it was impossible when guests left to get a cab.
Yeah, I guess it was a little bit like Brooklyn, but I think our success was that we treated people like gold. I had worked at a lot of very fancy French restaurants, Midtown. So I opened Montrachet with a casually elegant feel. Downtown, David Boulay was the chef. We charged $16 for a prefix meal. We had a pretty interesting wine list even back then. And 7 weeks after we opened Montrachet, we got 3 stars from the New York Times. So that was like winning the lottery without being able to collect the cash. But we lasted over 22 years down there, and it led to all this other amazing stuff. And it's interesting listening to what you just said about your experiences on a Saturday night. Because if you ask me, Jace, I think... a lot of what we accomplished, we laid a lot of bricks for the current restaurateurs, and I think they're starting to forget some of those lessons.
Yeah, that review you got was from Brian Miller, and I remember you always saying that was like winning the lottery without collecting the money. And I remember being a kid in 96, 97 and growing up in the city and going to Tribeca. That was a super hot area, and two of the restaurants down there, I think this was about 99, was Tribeca Grill and Nobu. And I remember I had a reservation at Nobu, and at the time, if Nobu was busy, they sent you to Tribeca Grill, and then they called the manager at Tribeca Grill, and then they called you over to Nobu.
Yeah, because we designed Nobu without a bar. So if you had no reservation, or let's just say you came early, we had no place to put you, you'd walk a couple of steps down the block to Tribeca Grill, and obviously when the table became available at Nobu, we bring you over right away.
And those photographs and all those posters are still there when you walk down Tribeca. And I remember going to the bathroom and seeing this joyous gentleman with a beard. I couldn't make it out. And I remember after sort of following up on restaurants and getting into him more, I found out later that person was Drew Nieporn. And I had the pleasure of working under you for 3 years. And it was, you know, really the beginning of my career in the sense that I learned so much from you. And one of the things that you always used to say was, and I bring this up a lot, and it's a pretty obvious saying, but I heard you say it first, which was restaurants are either run from the front of the house or the back of the house. Can you talk about
that? Yeah, there's a mentality that exists. Nowadays, the restaurateur, from a front-of-the-house perspective, is marginalized quite a bit, and chefs are becoming the new restaurateurs, and of course, their mentality starts in the back of the house, which is fine. The good news is that you get great food. The difficult news is that sometimes there's a take-it-or-leave-it attitude where no substitutions, we're not going to make compensation for anybody who's a vegetarian or has allergies. You know, sometimes the back of the house mentality has a certain hard line. You know, there's almost like, look, it's very difficult. Our business, as we know, is very difficult. We're dealing with the public all the time. But at the same time, if you're going to make a mistake, I hope one of the things you learned from me is make a mistake on behalf of the customer. In other words, let the customer get the better of you. You know, it's ultimately that's going to work out best. And by the way, the Jets got just now a tremendous pass interference play.
Now, and if I had to take a guess where you might be, I'm not sure. I'm assuming you might be in Alpine, New Jersey. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, no. My brother lives in Tenafly. I live in Ridgewood, and I'm an avid Jet fan. We actually, you know, one day you got to come to the green room at the Meadowlands. We do both the Jets and Giants. We do a guest chef program in their commissioner's club for both teams. But for the Jets, we have a room called the Green Room where we do the food also. So they're playing in Buffalo today, so I just had my, you know, dozen chicken wings and my Bloody Mary, so I'm in a good mood. But I think the Jets are about to get the ball on the 5-yard line, it looks like. So I'm glad your call is bringing me good luck.
And you bring up the green room, and one of the chefs working there sometimes is my direct mentor, Stephen Lewandowski, who's the executive chef of Tribeca Grill. And you guys also, had the pleasure of opening with the Myriad Restaurant Consulting, the Accella Club, which is in Citi Field, and that was a project. And I feel like you're so lucky because you know you basically have great tickets, and you're running a restaurant inside of
Well, you know, for me, the restaurant business is my life. It's my lifestyle. So I tend to do things in cities like San Francisco or Martha's Vineyard or Boca Raton, Florida, a place I like to go. But we've also done restaurants in cities with great sports teams like Pittsburgh and San Francisco because we wanted to go to a couple of games when we could. Currently, Jace, I don't know if you know this, but we're going to be doing the hamburgers over at Madison Square Garden. they've transformed the garden now. They spent a lot of time, a lot of money to fix up the place, and they're upgrading the concessions. They brought in John George von Gerichten to do something called Simply Chicken. They brought in Andrew Carmelini to do Sausage Boss. And Drew Napurin is going to be doing the Daily Burger. So daily means we can change the garnishes daily, so I might have to name a hamburger after you.
Please, please call it the morning after. It let it have a a egg, bacon, and just some whatever cheese is cheapest that day. whatever company you deal with.
By the way, the Jets just scored a touchdown, so now we're really happy.
The New York Jets just scored a touchdown. I'm talking with Drew Napurin, owner of basically some of the landmark restaurants in New York City. I mean, if you're eating a spicy tuna hand roll in the Midwest, or you're having something, obviously that was a partnership with the chef Nobu. But everyone thinks the main thoroughfare of sushi restaurants in their cities are just commonplace. But really, that started with Nobu. And Drew, you're seeing a lot of that now with Cortone in terms of working with Paul Liebrand. How is, ever since the documentary that came out, A Matter of Taste, have you seen a lot of customer clientele change?
Well, here's what happened. There was a filmmaker that followed Paul for the 10 years prior, actually 10 years of him being a chef in various other restaurants. And then the documentary culminates with he and I doing, transforming Montrachet into Cortone. And it played at a number of film festivals, continues to play at a number of film festivals. In fact, he just came back from Poland, where it was in Krakow. The bottom line is the movie was purchased by HBO. And when a food documentary gets purchased by HBO, obviously millions of people are going to see it. So the answer is, it really helped us a great deal. We've been open over 3 years now. Fine dining is difficult when you have a high average check. You mentioned it a moment ago. People are gravitating to the smaller, less expensive, younger venues, especially in Brooklyn. So there's so much added competition. So we're still fighting a little bit. Cortone is in a very rarefied air with 11 Madison and Danielle and John George and those restaurants. So, but if we do our 50, 60 covers a night, we're very happy.
Also, you had mentioned San Francisco, and a lot of people don't realize that you had a restaurant there for 10 years called...
No, 14. 14 years, 14, Rubicon.
Rubicon.
And Jordan, and we had some great chefs there. But the big hallmark there is that we had a wine program led by Larry Stone, and that spawned some of the great sommeliers in the world. Raj Parr right now is, he worked for us. He's now with Michael Mina, and he just wrote a book, I think it's The Art of the Sommelier or something of that nature. But the point is that our restaurants, even the ones that are no longer with us, lasted the test of time. 14 years in San Francisco is like an eternity. And Tyler Florence actually bought the restaurant, and he's doing quite well in the space now.
My first guest I had on was Michael Colomeco, and last night I just happened to serendipitously watch his show Real Food with Michael Colomeco. It's on Channel 13, and I'm doing research on you, and who pops up in the background is Drew Napurin. I guess there was a woman chef benefit, Arianda Ga, April Bluford was eating. You actually hired a lot of female chefs early on before it became, popular or whatever the case was. But
yeah, Montrachet, Deborah Ponczek was our chef. She actually was married to Bobby Flay in the early days, and she won Rising Star Chef when she was up against Bobby Flay, ironically. One before he did. And then Tracy Desjardins, of course, has made tremendous career on the West Coast. She was a sous chef at Montrachet and became our chef at Rubicon in 1994. And then Patricia Williams was a chef of ours who she continues to cook in New York when we did that City Wine and Cigar restaurant. I don't know if you remember that. And so for me, it's not even a question. It's more of a question of talent versus gender. And quite frankly, I think New York is very fortunate. We have people like Gabrielle Hamilton, and we also have, obviously,
Anita Lowe.
Retag. We have quite a number of, of course, April Bloomfield. So we're fortunate.
Well, Drew, I want to thank you for doing the show. I also want to thank you for making me a huge Bruce Springsteen fan. Drew took me to about three concerts, which was like all access. Drew actually hosts a event at Tribeca Grill every year. It's one of Bruce Springsteen's charities, and actually it's really close to him because it's his manager's daughter. Drew, can you talk about that for 2 seconds?
Yeah, the Kristen Ann Carr is a young woman who died of sarcoma cancer, Barbara Carr's daughter, Barbara being one of Bruce's managers. So back in 92 is when she passed, and Bruce did a huge concert at Madison Square Garden, and then the after party was with us. And since that day, time, they do a party in the end of April every year, Christine Carr benefit, raising money for sarcoma research, and Bruce always comes by, and it's always a huge show. Last year, we had the Young Rascals, believe it or not, you know, the guys who played Groovin', and How Can I Be Sure they played, so Bill Murray showed up. It was great, you know, it's really a terrific show. But I want to say that this program sounds really good. I'm so happy that you had me on, and normally, obviously, on a Sunday, you know, I'm such an avid football person, it would be hard to track me down, but I'm glad you did. And then, you know, when you go to restaurants, what you're doing is actually, you're actually doing a service for our industry, because when you see something that's wrong, if we don't point it out, it becomes pervasive. And it's the littlest things that are going to screw up our industry. So it's important that we all point out what we think are transgressions that are not going to help our business. Because ultimately, you know, when you point something like that out, you do actually help people.
Thanks, Drew. We'll talk to you in a few months. Thanks again. Enjoy the Jets. Go Jets. J-E-T-S. Jets.
Go Jason Colucci.
We just talked to Drew Nieporn. You know, we're going to take a break now. We're going to come back. We're going to have Joey Campanero on Little Owl, The Market Table, the most restaurant restaurants of neighborhood restaurants. Morning After. We're back. Wow. Talking to Drew, you know, it's funny. Drew is correct, because I've catered many events that Drew has been at that have been on a Sunday football. You know, definitely the Jets. And I learned a ton. I met a ton of people. The thing about Drew is he's one of the great restaurateurs in the likes of Sergio Marchionne, Joe Baum. You know, Danny Meyer is his peer. But he's, you know, he was just great to work for, and I learned a ton from him. Also, yeah, I was really happy for him to give us his time. Now, we want to talk about the neighborhood restaurant. Now, I did a little research on our next guest, other than the obvious stuff. Joey Campanero, chef, owner, Little Owl, and Market Table. Now, if you look at where his restaurants are, they both have double-digit addresses, meaning 90 Bedford Street is Little Owl, and 54 Carmine is Market Table. Now, when you get into Manhattan real estate, usually it's higher than that. So, I mean, I just thought that was kind of funny to look at, because that seems very neighborhoodish, meaning it's almost like a small town or something. But these are restaurants that are, you know, smack in the West Village, where my mom kind of was from. She grew up on Bedford and Carmine. But I want to see... Joe, are you there?
Yeah, I'm in.
Joey, man, once again, congratulations on winning the, was it Meatball Madness?
Yeah, that was the last one, yeah.
And Lee Schrager was on last week, and we talked about the success of the New York City Food and Wine. And do you enjoy events like that, or are they just kind of like, you know, restaurant fluff?
Like they're really great to do. I mean, I also go to one in Miami.
And do you do it? Are you just going there as a personality, or do you do the Jada's event down there, or any of those things?
Yeah, this year it is the it's called Burger Bash. It's right on the beach.
And that's isn't that a few weeks or a couple of months or?
It's February 23rd to the 26th.
And talk a little bit about Little Owl in terms of it is, you know, I imagine there are people that come there three times a week, and you have probably on the weekends a lot of people that venture in from out of town. Do you have a lot of repeat clientele?
Yeah, we certainly have regulars, but I only reserve half of the restaurant, and half of the restaurant is pretty small.
Yeah, so what is it, about 28 seats? 30?
Yeah, 28 seats, 10 tables. So I have 5 tables get reserved each night. So the other 5 tables are left for people walking off the street.
Now those five tables, I'm sorry, were reserved for people just, you know, walk-ins, or are they for your regulars?
Yeah, 5 tables are reserved, and then the other 5 are for people to walk in off the street.
And also jump over to Market Table, which is definitely it's weird because it's a neighborhood restaurant. A lot of people go there, but when I go there, I feel like there's a huge seasonality to the menu, and it's not a stale place where you're going to in the Village where there's just a ton of stuff. You know, the menu always stays the same, and that's the appeal of the restaurant. You know, you managed to one hit the that sort of appeal of having people come, but also change the menu up a little bit and have the staples. You keep the burger on there and stuff. Do you find that tough with your clientele?
No, it's actually the opposite. It's easier when you have people. You know, what happens is the business and the guests really dictate what the business is going to be. Just like we allow the seasons to dictate what the menu is going to be. But finding something that's a signature to this is something that doesn't have to be seasonal. And so we find a great product, like we get the burgers from Pat LaFreda, and make the bread, and it's served with French fries. You can make that all year round, so that's something that's going to hang out, and it's going to be on the menu. But the dedication from the chef to choose the right ingredients and to not skimp is what I think makes something to turn into a signature dish. Like at the Little Al, the meatball sliders that have been on the menu for 6 years, and the pork chop, which has been on the menu for 6 years. Those dishes aren't going to change.
I think the first time I had that dish was you do an event when I actually was working for Drew called Taste of the NFL. Are you guys still involved with that, or I think that's where I met you.
That was out in at Giant Stadium.
Yeah. So anyone who wants to know, Taste of the NFL is a benefit the National Football League has, and it benefits hunger in the country, and all the benefit, the proceeds goes towards that. And the first time I met Joey was there. I was working at Tribeca Grill with Stephen Lewandowski, and you had some tasty stuff. Do you guys are really involved. I mean, for one man team. I know it's a big group effort, but every event I would always see you at. Do you guys, is that an active thing, or do you like to sort of get around? Or
we definitely like to share the love. It's just a matter of whether we're invited or not. And so if we're invited, then we make the effort to get involved.
We're always invited to the morning after. I'll let you know that. Where are you now? Are you in the restaurant now? You sound like you're like upstate somewhere or something. I don't know. The air seems kind of crisp.
No, I'm at home today. Taking it out.
Do you live in the city?
Yeah, I live in Westwood.
Where, so if you're not dining out at the Owl or Market Table or any other your chef friends, any specific places that you like to check out? Or?
Well, I'd love to go to Crispo on 14th Street.
Okay. Chef Crispo, yeah.
Crispo. I'd love to go to Barbulo on Washington, Jonathan Waxman's restaurant.
Try the chicken?
I like the chicken.
That's the difference.
I like the pasta, too. I like the steak. I like how Jonathan's not afraid to cook with chilies.
Yeah.
That's why his book is out. It's called Italian My Way. Most people say that Italian food has to be authentic, and Jonathan, it doesn't have to be that way.
I mean, we're both Italian guys. I mean, how do you feel? Do you feel like you're under a little bit more of a microscope if you're doing something like meatballs or something where they'd be like, oh, you're selling out? Like, it's not. You put like a non-traditional ingredient in there, and then all of a sudden you're a sellout.
Yeah, I'm Italian American, and I'm second generation, so I learned this is from my grandmother that were adapted to what she could afford. Rent luxuries. And so the rest came from being curious and traveling and going to Italy and such. But yeah, I don't claim to be an authentic Italian chef.
No, I mean,
I'm Italian, and I love the bold flavors of the Mediterranean. And so the way I'd like to label my cuisine is seasonal and Mediterranean.
No, you definitely have a, like, you know, a first generation feel where you have a lot of the background and the techniques of that stuff, but you definitely sort of adapted a lot of the new movements that are happening in food. Do you have any new projects coming up that you want to talk about, or events or anything?
You know, with we're pretty heavily invested in is an event space, which is on it's on Greenwich Avenue between Bank and West 12th.
Okay.
And it's basically the private dining room for the Little Owl. And the space is modeled after the restaurant. And so it seats about 30 people at a time. And but the versatility of the room is what I love. It's, you know, there's open windows. It's a storefront on Greenwich Avenue. And you're just looking out onto the New York streets. And it's been going for about 8 months now. And the best response that I get from it is from... the party thrower's death. You know, there's a great testament to that when they say that they're at a party and they feel like they own a restaurant.
So anyone that is having a wedding or any sort of social event in the next, you know, decade or anything, what number should they call, or a website or anything they should go on to book that space?
Yeah, you know, the Little Owl website is the littleowlnyc.com, and then the telephone number is 212-741-4695.
And anyone who mentions the morning after gets a free order of meatballs. No, I was just kidding. That was a joke. I'm talking with Joey Campanaro, chef, owner of Little Owl and the Market Table. Joey, I want to thank you for your time. We'll check in with you in a few months and see what's going on. Anything else going on?
My pleasure. I appreciate being on the horn with you.
Anytime, man. Thanks again.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we're going to go into our next guest, or just walked into the studio. This is The Morning After. Check out The Morning After promo video on YouTube, The Jason Colucci, at The Jason Colucci Twitter, Morning After. We're back. The Morning After. I was plugging my the Morning After promo video, which Stephen Kahn actually shot and cut together. When I was sort of pitching the promo video to him, I said I wanted WKRP in Cincinnati intro meets a David Fincher film meets like those Amex commercials where De Niro's walking around Tribeca and he's like, "Oh, this is my Tribeca, this is my town, this is Nobu." So if you listen to it, you'll see it's about 32 seconds long. You can catch it through the Morning After fan page on Facebook, or Jason Colucci on Facebook, or The Jason Colucci on Twitter. You know, I didn't want to give into all this social media stuff, but I had to. I really did. I was noticing how easy it is to get people to listen through it rather than my big mouth. But I'm going to go into my next guest, Joey Salamini. He's the executive chef of Cotto Bene. Now, Cotto Bene is a pizzeria in Park Slope that I just came across about a year ago through a friend, Mike Verga, who is actually one of the owners. And I do business with him in a cheese operation that he works for. And he said, "Come on, just order a pizza, just try it out." Now, I come from Staten Island, and I only eat pizza from a specific place called Lee's Tavern. Now, I work in a pizza place. I'm not going to mention which place it is, but I'm very particular about my pizza. So I was at the gentleman, Mark Trumpor, who's running the marathon, who we're going to follow his progress in a few minutes. So thank you for getting that busy signal off the headphones. I appreciate that. Now, Mark was, so we ordered a pizza to his house. And it's a traditional, it's a Brooklyn, you know, nice cheese pie. It's got good flavor, you know, that good mixture of cheese and sauce. You know, you're not sort of like pushing too far in either direction. And I really liked it. So, Chef Joey Salamini, talk to me. What's going on with the Cotto Bene?
Well, we've been there about a year and a half now.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's moving forward. We're getting busier and busier. We made good relationships with the people in the neighborhood. We just have a good product. Pizza's good. Cheese is good. Comes from Leone's.
Now, Leone Mozzarella is originally from a Bay Ridge company. They still have a place there, but then they have their facilities. I think it's in Union, New Jersey,
yes. It's actually, the original's in Bensonhurst, not Bay Ridge. Yeah.
Okay. I get those places mixed up.
But yeah, I mean, fresh ingredients, great products. That's what makes the end result.
And the thing is, also, when I get takeout from this place, I don't get the pizza. You guys are doing other stuff.
Yeah, we have a full kitchen menu. We have some really good items on there for appetizers. We have three different types of calamari.
No, all right, let's put the calamari thing to rest. Is it calamad, calamari? What? How do we say it? Because I grew up in you know, in San Antonio, I say calamad, and then I come and I work in a restaurant, and rather not to confuse everyone else, I say calamari. What is it, Mike? And Mike Verger can chime in here. He's the owner of the restaurant.
I say calamad like you.
Calamad. Okay. Yeah. Now, does that confuse the customer?
Nah, I don't think so.
Okay. Everyone no, has not it. At all. It shouldn't.
Okay.
Everyone's got their own way of saying it. Everyone makes their point, you know?
And that's sort of a traditional dish where it comes with the tomato sauce. Now, that tomato sauce is the same stuff you put on the pizza, or is it a little bit
No,
different?
It's a little bit different, but we also have two different sauces. I wanted to step outside the box with it a little bit, and we made a traditional sauce, a brown sauce, which is consistent of... cherry peppers, banana peppers as the main ingredient. Yeah, it's a little bit of spicy. It's not that bad. And then we have an arrabbiata sauce, which is chunks of plum tomato and cherry peppers. I'm sorry, not cherry peppers, banana peppers.
Cool.
And customers love it.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Bensonhurst.
Okay, and what's your pizza spot? Like, when you're thinking of growing up, I mean, what is the place?
In Bensonhurst?
Yeah.
Always go to Lenny's on 86th Street.
Lenny's on 86th?
Yeah, because I grew up right on Bay 23rd, so it was right down the block. It was right up the block.
What are your thoughts on the whole new pizza, this whole new pizza movement that sort of sprung out of, we'd say, California, in terms of, like, it's a 12-inch pie, the ingredients a little bit more artisanal, and it's a different take on what we grew up with, which is, you know, say, a 18 to 22-inch pie, and we can get it by the slice. And they pretty much have the same price point. Do you think that's another sect of pizza that's sort of come out, or do you embrace it, or you think it's everyone, you know, there's a home for all this pizza that's going on now?
Nah, not really. Like, yeah, it's up to the person. I mean, if you would ask some of the old-timers in our neighborhood from where we have the pizzeria, they wouldn't agree with it at all. They like their old style ways, you know what I mean?
What and is there a phone number to call for the place? You have it on here?
Yeah, it's 718-722-7200.
And you guys are open pretty much
seven days a week, right? Ten to ten during the week, Fridays and Saturdays, 10 to 11.
And you guys embrace something, being in the restaurant industry, a lot of people turned their backs on in the beginning because it's just confusing information, which was the website to put your order through. Mike, what's the exact name of it?
Yeah, the Seamless Web.
Seamless Web. Yeah. And you guys had done it, and you go online, you put your order in, and it increased business a lot, I mean, right?
A lot, yeah. We get a lot of business from them.
Yeah, it generates a lot of business. It's really good.
And has it sustained itself, or people, like, do they go on there first and then go to the phone number, or they stick with ordering that way?
They stick with ordering that way. And you know, it's grown so much. And there's some other, you know, I guess, organizations that have come out, you know, but Seamless is the best.
And, like, you also are affiliated with Leone Mozzarella. Now, I went out to the plant, and we won't get so far into it because we're here to talk about Cotto Bene. But if anyone knows anything about making cheese and stuff, it's an artisanal process. And when you have a lot of people that want to buy it, you kind of have this sort of thing. Do you stay small? Do you go huge? Now, I've been to the plant, and it's this lovely marriage of a small place, you know, everyone, a lot of people that work there are family,
right?
And you're able to meet the needs without completely doing a huge sort of polio-esque style thing. And it has a great feel to it. You walk in there, and I remember when I had the tour, you know, you meet the uncle, and then the cousin's working here, and then you try the cheese, and it's amazing. And you guys make it every day.
It's not
sitting around.
No, fresh every day. It's made. We take the orders the day before, 24 hours usually,
yeah,
and then we process the cheese and deliver the next day.
And then that cheese goes on the pizza.
Correct.
And all that is
pizza, pasta dishes.
Do you guys are traditionalists with just with the fresh mozz, or do you go with the dried stuff sometimes, or no?
No, we go with, sometimes we go with the dry stuff.
We have sell that too.
We have different specialty pies, so according to you know what kind of pie it is what kind of cheese we use on it.
Now, I just had two great restaurateurs, Joey and Drew Neeporn. Is there any places in the city that you guys like to eat out when you go into the city, or you sort of just? You weren't working too much these days.
Well, yeah, I'm always working. But
we're there all the time.
Yeah. But when I do go out, I'd like to try new places. I don't discriminate or anything like that.
I have in studio Mike Verger and Joey Salamini. Joey Salamini is the executive chef of Cotta Bene. Cotta Bene is a pizzeria and restaurant. You can sit down in there. There's about, I'd say, about 25 to 30 seats in the front.
Yeah.
Get takeout. It's located, I think it's on the corner of Carroll and 3rd Avenue. Anything else going on with you guys? Business is growing. Every time I go there, there's more and more people because I live in the neighborhood. I walk by it a lot.
Nah, other than that, I mean, we also do catering.
Okay.
We have a full catering menu.
So good. So if you call Little Owl and you get their space and you say, hey, can we not use your food? Can we use Cotta Bene's food? We can kind of all work that out. I'm just kidding. I'm going to take a break. Mike and Joey are going to hang out in studio. We're going to talk to my friend Mark Trumpor, who's running in the New York City Marathon. Hopefully he's okay. His wife is not happy about this call-in. He's probably in the last 2 miles. And then right actually after the break, we're going to talk to 86list.com. Morning After. We're back. Morning After. Now, I'm just checking the results for my friend Mark Trumpor. I don't know if he might have finished. Actually, no, he's on the last mile. Awesome. We're going to go into 86list.com. Laura Wirtz runs in a major website, 86list.com. Laura Wirtz, are you there?
I'm here. How are you, Jason?
Laura Wirtz, go ahead. Hot job of the week.
All right. Well, since you're talking a lot about Italian cuisine, I thought this job was appropriate. This week's hot job from Frankie's 570 Spuntino in the West Village. They are looking for a paid pasta apprentice. The ideal candidate is a creative individual who wishes to learn the art of pasta making, and they specialize in fresh pasta. They, on their menu, have a house-made pasta section, and right now that includes house-made gnocchi, linguine, cavatelli, garganelli, and ravioli. So it sounds like a great place to learn a very important skill, especially in the New York City restaurant industry.
This is a job for a kid who's got his feet wet a little bit. He knows how to, you know, he knows how to sit on the line. He's been a line cook, but he wants to get some deeper skills before he takes on the title of sous chef. It seems like.
Yeah.
I feel like we can run around. If we get Joey, we'll get Drew. We have everyone in house right now. I feel like I can open like one of the best Italian restaurants ever. But we need venture capital. What else is going on? How's your wedding going? You got a wedding coming up in the next 8 months, right?
Oh, it's less than that. It's less than 6 months. Well, let's see. You know, what are we doing? We're doing everything. But one of them is we found an officiant that we found a very nice person to marry us on the day of. So technically, that's all we need. you know, just Greg and I and an efficient and two witnesses. So we got that covered, and now we're working on all the fun stuff. So with florists, I'm talking to a lot of florists right now, and, you know, planning out all of the rentals that are involved with this whole process. So.
Well, congratulations on that. Also, congratulations. I spoke about this last week on your little blurb in New York Times about 86.com.
Yeah,
it has nothing to do with me, of course. This is all a part of a team effort here at The Morning After. 86list.com, Laura Wirtz, thank you very much. Talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Anytime. So my buddy Mark Trumpor, he's running in a marathon. I spoke about this a lot. We kind of been checking in. I think he's on the last mile. We're actually going to call him right now. He came in last week to talk a little bit about his diet, what he was eating. And he had finished around this time, which is kind of funny because he had been training for this for 6 months. And my whole thing was like, can you try and finish between the time The Morning After comes to an end? And I was sort of like, yeah, I know you've been training for 6 months, but can you finish the last 5 minutes of the show? I don't know. We're going to call him. He's got his we've been following him on Google. His bib number is 46560, and he's on mile 26.
Nice finish. Pedal straight ahead. Hi.
Mark Trump, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
You're almost done. How much further do you have?
I just passed the finish line.
Whoa! Mazel tov. Congratulations. Everybody give him a hand. Yes. Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. Keep walking. 15.
Koto Benny will be sending you over a pizza, compliments of The Morning After.
Thank you. I love this pizza.
What was the hardest part of the race? Was it running over that annoying bridge?
Yeah, definitely the Queensboro Bridge. And the reason is that the first time this out really starts to creep in. You really start thinking, there's no way I'm going to finish this race.
But then
you land in Manhattan. And everybody is cheering for you.
And you're coming.
And you go up First Avenue, and it's great. Like suddenly, you're re-energized.
So what are you looking at now? Are there thousands? This is the radio. So are there thousands of people around you? I mean,
there are.
Want to do it again?
Oh yeah.
Congratulations.
There's like thousands of people around here.
Congratulations again. You're part of some of the great names like, whoever the Kenyan guy that won this thing. I'm assuming he was Kenyan. I don't know that for a fact.
Bill Rogers.
What else? Anything else that happened in the race? Anybody? Did you have to pee during it? Any of that stuff?
I did, actually, in the Bronx. I thought that was the responsible place to do any elimination.
Yeah, if you're going to do it, you do it in the Bronx. Thanks.
Leave it there.
Thanks again, Mark Trumpor. Mark Trumpor is runs and works at a place called, what is it, Graphian?
Graphian, yeah. I work for a company in Graphian, and my entire running timeline will be published on our website, I guess tomorrow, since tomorrow's Monday, and I'll be back at my desk. www.graphian.com, that's like a sentient graph, GRAPHIENT.com.
And anyone that wants any information balanced out or checked against each other or anyone that ran in the race, they can go on Graphian and check it out. Once again, thank you, Mark Trumpor. Congratulations from The Morning After. Everybody give him a round of applause.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Anytime. Talk to you next week. All right. Wow. I actually have about 2 minutes I can just talk a little bit about some stuff. I have a new producer to The Morning After. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Jesse Kiefer.
Jesse Kiefer, thank you, one, for all your help this week. Next week, you will be producing the entire show.
I know. It's exciting.
This is our child now.
Absolutely. A baby between us.
And this is, we're in Roberta's. This is a very modern relationship here. What are some of the things that I should expect now? Because we're doing some pre-interviews and stuff, but, you know, usually I take the reins on executive producing and talking to everybody. Anything, any curveballs I'm going to see?
Well, I guess, I mean, my focus right now has been wine, so I think I'm going to kind of up your beverage program here and everything that I want to get some psalms on and people to talk about wine. And I also want to kind of focus on how, I guess I'm a server. So the question I always get asked is, what else do I do besides serve? And so many of my friends are musicians or singers or something like that. So I really want to get people who are in the industry on and playing music. And I think that'd be a cool thing to focus on too.
Yeah, we're talking again about stuff that you don't do in a restaurant for. We said what I say civilians, people that don't work in industry. If you want to have a good relationship with your server, don't say what else do you do. Because I mean, I think that sort of alienates you. You know, you could probably stiff them on a tip. They won't be as upset. Because you know, everyone that works in the restaurant industry now is completely devoted to the industry. I work with them every day. A lot of people are career people like myself that work in it every day. And some people love it and they're just making ends meet. And they've chosen that industry to make money. But they have a lot of stuff going, whether artistic endeavors or they're starting companies like Graphian or producers for The Morning After. But thank you. This is great. I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, and we've got Seamus Mullen from Tertullia on next week.
Oh, so hot right now. Wow.
So hot right now. Two stars from the New York Times, and they're just going up. So it'll be a good show.
Once again, this is The Morning After. I want to thank Jack Inslee.
Thanks, man.
I want to jack him. Our producer here of the Heritage Radio Network. I want to thank my sponsor, Savorian Wines, Chad Turnbull and Elke DeSota. I always get her name mixed up. This is The Morning After. Once again, go on The Morning After with Jason Colucci fan page. Like it. Watch the promo video. I want to thank all my guests again today. Tune in next week. Morning After. Thanks again.
Following is a public service announcement from Food Karma. To kick off the New York City Meat Week in style, Meat with a Twist will bring together the best chefs and mixologists for a cocktail food pairing party on November 7th from 6 to 10 p.m. at City Winery. Meat with a Twist features 10 cocktails paired with 10 chef selections highlighting local, sustainably grown meat such as duck, lamb, chicken, pork, beef, bison, and ostrich. The party will launch a week's worth of events throughout the city that celebrate the slow food movement bringing sustainable meats to our tables. Again, that's November 7th from 6 to 10 p.m. at City Winery. Updates, tickets, and more information are available at meatweeknyc.com.